There was one other sutta I wanted to read yesterday, which is quite nice. Couldn't find it in the heat of the moment, but it's a nice one, and then it relates to the other topics I'm going to bring up today. So this is from Sanyutta Nikaya, Book of Sixes, or 36, called Sutta 7, The Sick Ward. I really like this because, you know, we all know from usually the Vinaya class that the story of the Buddha sort of going through the monastery and seeing the sick monk and realizing that no one's taking care of him, and he and Ananda go and sort of bathe him and change his bedding, and then the Buddha gives a talk to the community that, you know, we don't have family anymore, so we have to look after each other. And this is a nice sutta too, because you'll see. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling in Vaisali, in the great wood, in the hall, with the peaked roof. Then in the evening, the Blessed One emerged from seclusion and went to the sick ward, where he sat down on a pointed seat and addressed the bhikkhus thus. Bhikkhus, a bhikkhu should wait his time mindfully and clearly comprehending. This is our instruction to you. And how, bhikkhu, is a bhikkhu mindful? Here, bhikkhus, a bhikkhu dwells contemplating the body, and the body, ardent, clearly comprehending, mindful, having put away covetousness and displeasure in regard to the world. He dwells contemplating feelings and feelings, mind and mind, phenomena and phenomena, ardent, clearly comprehending, mindful, having put away covetousness and displeasure in regard to the world. It is in such a way that a bhikkhu is mindful. And how, bhikkhu, does a bhikkhu might exercise clear comprehension? Here, bhikkhus, a bhikkhu is one who acts with clear comprehension when going forward and returning, when looking ahead and looking aside, when drawing in and extending his limbs, when wearing his robes and carrying his outer robe and bowl, when eating, drinking, chewing his food, and tasting, when defecating and urinating, when walking, standing, sitting, falling asleep, waking up, speaking, and keeping silent. It is in such a way that a bhikkhu exercises clear comprehension. A bhikkhu should wait his time mindful and clear comprehending. This is our instruction to you. Bhikkhus, while a bhikkhu dwells thus mindful and clearly comprehending, diligent, ardent, and resolute, if there arises in him a pleasant feeling, and he goes through this also with unpleasant feeling and neutral feelings, he understands thus, there has arisen in me a pleasant feeling. Now that is dependent, not independent. Dependent on what? Dependent on this very body. But this body is impermanent, conditioned, dependently arisen. So when the pleasant feeling has arisen in dependence on a body that is impermanent, conditioned, dependently arisen, how can it be permanent? He dwells contemplating impermanence in the body in a pleasant feeling. He dwells contemplating vanishing, contemplating fading away, contemplating cessation, contemplating relinquishment. As he dwells thus, understand the underlying tendencies to lust in regard to the body and in regard to pleasant feeling is abandoned by him. Then he goes through the painful and neither painful nor pleasant. And if he feels a pleasant feeling, he understands it is impermanent. He understands it is not to be held to. He understands it is not delighted in. If he feels painful feelings, he understands it is impermanent, not to be held to, not to be delighted in. If he feels neither painful nor pleasant feelings, he understands it is impermanent, not to be held to, not to be delighted in. If he feels a pleasant feeling, he feels it detached. If he feels a painful feeling, he feels it detached. If he feels a neither painful nor pleasant feeling, he feels it detached. When he feels a feeling terminating with the body, he understands, I feel a feeling terminating with the body. When he feels a feeling terminating with life, he understands, I feel a feeling terminating with life. He understands with the breakup of the body, following the exhaustion of life, all that is left not being delighted in, will become cool right here. Just as, Bhikkhu, an oil lamp is dependent on the oil and the wick, and with the exhaustion of the oil and the wick, it is extinguished through lack of fuel, so too, Bhikkhus, when a Bhikkhu feels a feeling terminating with the body, terminating with life, he understands with the breakup of the body, following the exhaustion of life, all that is left, not being delighted in, will become cool right here. Then that was going to be the introduction to the next seven factors, Bhojanga. And this is the, there's three suttas here that are almost identical. That's where they're ill. So I'll just read, I'll read the one for the blessed one. So this is the Bhojanga chant that we do. So the first one would be 14, Sunyutta 46, 14. And this, that's about Venerable Mahakasapa. And then 15 is about Venerable Mahamoggallana. And then 16 is about the Buddha. So on one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling in Rajagaha, in the bamboo grove, the squirrel sanctuary. Now on that occasion, the Blessed One was sick, afflicted, gravely ill. Then the Venerable Mahachunda approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, and sat down to one side. The Blessed One then said to the Venerable Mahachunda, "Recite the factors of enlightenment, Chunda." "The seven factors of enlightenment, Venerable Sir, have been rightly expounded by the Blessed One. When developed and cultivated, they lead to direct knowledge, to liberation, to Nibbana." What seven? "The enlightenment factor of mindfulness has been rightly expounded by the Blessed One. When developed and cultivated, it leads to direct knowledge and enlightenment, to Nibbana." He goes through all seven of them. "These seven factors of enlightenment, Venerable Sir, have been rightly expounded by the Blessed One. When developed and cultivated, they lead to direct knowledge, to enlightenment, to Nibbana." "Surely, Chunda, they are factors of enlightenment. Surely, Chunda, they are factors of enlightenment." With exclamation points. "This is what the Venerable Mahachunda said. The teacher approved, and the Blessed One recovered from that illness. In such a way, the Blessed One was cured from his illness." Okay, so then I'll come back to the Bhojanga Sutta here in just a second, the chant that we do. But I just happened to come across this one. Yesterday I did this sutta from the Anguttara, Book of Ten on ignorance. Just the sutta right before it just happened to read it. I won't read the whole sutta because it's pretty long, but it's Book of Tens, number 60, called Girimananda. So this is, we always hear about the Bhojanga chant as being a curing chant or a healing chant. So there's another one here. "On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Savatthi in Jeta's grove, Anuttapindika's park. Now on that occasion, the Venerable Girimananda was sick, afflicted, and gravely ill. Then Venerable Ananda approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, and sat down to one side, and said to him, 'Bhante, the Venerable Girimananda is sick, afflicted, and gravely ill. It would be good if the Blessed One would visit him out of compassion.' 'If, Ananda, you visit the Bhikkhu Girimananda, and speak to him about the 10 perceptions, it is possible that on hearing about them, his affliction will immediately subside. What are the 10? So the first one, the perception of impermanence. 2, the perception of not self. 3, the perception of unattractiveness. 4, the perception of danger. 5, the perception of abandoning. 6, the perception of dispassion. 7, the perception of cessation. 8, the perception of non-delighting in the entire world. 9, the perception of impermanence in all conditioned phenomena, in 10, mindfulness of breathing. And then it goes through actually each of those different factors and explains it in a little more detail. In Ipananda, you visit the Bhikkhu Girimananda and speak to him about these 10 perceptions. It is possible that on hearing them, he will immediately recover from his affliction. Then the Venerable Ananda had learned these 10 perceptions of the Blessed One. He went to the Venerable Girimananda and spoke to him about them. The Venerable Girimananda heard about these 10 perceptions. His affliction immediately subsided. The Venerable Girimananda recovered from that affliction, and that is how he was cured from his affliction. Ajahn Mumpur, do you know, was Girimananda an arahant? Or does anybody know anything about him?
I think there's a whole lot. Yes, he is an arahant.
One of the footnotes, I think that's the only place he actually shows up in the entire canon. But I read one thing that said, well, it was interesting, kind of the reason I've been doing this order is that, you know, it's like when monks were sick, it's like we didn't always just go and chant the Bodhisattva Sutta and they all became perfectly healthy. When the commentator pointed out that the Bodhisattva chant, you know, all three of the bhikkhus who were being chanted to were arahants. And, you know, sort of great disciples of the Buddha. So but it has become a tradition in Buddhist countries and even in America now to chant that sutta if someone's going to have an operation or, you know, sick to some degree.
You're involved in the nature.
Yeah. So kind of on a related.
You're in just a less longer.
Yeah. So kind of on a, you know, sort of a similar type, two suttas to read, kind of a similar nature that is about being ill and, you know, how, I like that first sutta, you know, how the Buddha just goes to the sick ward and he just really goes through and talks about, you know, actually like, you know, not being attached to the body and really even spells it out to him, like, you know, some of you probably here might even, probably will die from your afflictions and this is the way you should practice the termination of the life force. So there's another sutta. This is Sunyutta 52, number 10, called Gravely Ill. On one occasion, the Venerable Anuruddha was dwelling at Savatthi in the blind man's grove, sick, afflicted, gravely ill. Then a number of bhikkhus approached the Venerable Ananda and said to him, "In what dwelling does Venerable Ananda usually dwell in, so that arisen bodily painful feelings do not persist, obsessing the mind?" So he's still sick, but it's not obsessing the mind. "It is, friends, because I dwell the mind well established in the 4 establishments of mindfulness, that arisen bodily feelings do not persist, obsessing the mind. What poor? Here, friends, I dwell contemplating the body and the body, feelings and feelings, mind and mind, phenomena and phenomena. Ardent, clearly comprehending, mindful, having removed covetousness and displeasure in regard to the world. It is, friends, because I dwell with a mind well established in these 4 establishments of mindfulness that the arisen bodily painful feelings do not persist, obsessing my mind." And then just 2 suttas preceding the monkey that we read about yesterday is so Sunyutta 47, number 9. And I'm not going to read the whole sutta here, but we had a non-phenomenological question the other day about someone said they heard a lay teacher saying that Chunda's offering to the Buddha, you know, caused him to die. The sutta, this section of the sutta that I'm going to read is also in the Parinibbana Sutta, but I had forgotten about it. This kind of, to me, actually sort of proves that that's not the case. So he's a Mbelu Vagamaka, and he's just about ready to enter the rains retreats. So then, when the Blessed One had entered upon the rains retreat, a severe illness arose in him. This is according to the notes here, about 10 months before his Parinibbana. He had entered upon the rains retreat. A severe illness arose in him, and terrible pains bordering on death assailed him. But the Blessed One endured them, mindful and clearly comprehending, without becoming distressed. Then the thought occurred to the Blessed One, "It is not proper for me to attain final Nibbana without having addressed my attendants and taking leave of the Bhikkhu Sangha. Let me then suppress this illness by means of energy and live on, having resolved upon the life formation." Then the Blessed One suppressed that illness by means of energy and living on, having resolved upon the life formations. The Blessed One then recovered from that illness. Soon after he had recovered, he came out of his dwelling and sat down on the seat that had been prepared in the shade behind the dwelling. The Venerable Ananda then approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, sat down to one side, and said to him, "It is splendid, Venerable Sir. The Blessed One is bearing up. Splendid that he has recovered!" "But Venerable Sir, when the Blessed One was ill, my body seemed as if it was drugged. I had become disoriented. The teachings were not clear to me. Nevertheless, I had this much consolation, that the Blessed One would not attain final Nibbana without having made pronouncement concerning the Bhikkhu Sangha." And then it goes on a little bit more. Again, the Buddha just bearing with illness and being able to overcome it. But he's mainly overcoming it with mindfulness and clear comprehension. Then I thought I'd just go through the Bhojanga Paritta chant, and we chant it a lot, and just sort of highlight some of the important words of it. This is a beautiful trilinear translation done by Sudaso Bhikkhu. So the opening line is Bhojango Satisangato Dhammanang Vichayo Tata Viriyampi Dipasa Dibhojanga Jatata Pare. So right there he's already mentioned all of the seven enlightenment factors. So there's the first word, Bhojanga, the awakening factor. Sata Sankito is mindfulness is reckoned. And then Dhammanang Vichayo, which is the investigation factor, the Dhamma investigation. And Tata is has that. So mindfulness is considered a factor of mindfulness. Investigation of Dhammas is as well. And Viryang Piti Pasati Bhojanga, that's Virya Piti Pasati in Bhojanga. So the enlightenment factors of energy, rapture, and tranquility. Those are also factors. Then the next line, Samadhi, Samadha Upeka Bhojanga. So the enlightenment factors of concentration and equanimity. These seven were all. And then it's Munina, which is the sage, say, properly expounded, developed, and made much of. And then I'll just go through like the English translation from here. They lead to higher knowledge, to Nibbana, to enlightenment. By the utterance of this truth, may you always be safe. So as we chant that three times, Etena Satchava Jaina Sotite Hotu Sapada. Then on one occasion, the protector, the Buddha, having seen Moggallana and Kassapa, Gilan Edukite, which is unwell and in discomfort, taught the seven factors of enlightenment. Having greatly delighted in that, they were immediately released from suffering, from illness. By the utterance of this truth, may you always be safe. At one time, the Dhamma king was also oppressed by sickness. This doctrine was considerately recited by Chunda the elder. The Lord rejoiced and rose up from his affliction. By the utterance of this truth, may you always be safe. Afflictions were left behind by the great sage who has crossed over to awakening. Those defilements were taken away by the path and who achieved the fullness of the Dhamma. By the words of this truth, may you always be safe. Any questions on that? Okay, so I just have two suttas that I want to end with. Not related to this one entirely. At the beginning of the readings, I was reading Bhante Gunaratana and in many of the other sort of commentaries you'll read about the Bhojanga, you do hear the sort of what I was calling like the sequential order, like you develop mindfulness first, and then as a result of that, then when it's perfected, then up comes the next factor of Dhamma investigation, and then energy, and sort of going through this. But it's also talked about this way here. So there's two ways, but this is the only place that it comes up. It's not the sort of sequential order. This is Samyutta 46, number 53, which is fire. And I'm not going to read the whole sutta. So this is section one. There's four sections to it. On an occasion, bhikkhus, when the mind becomes sluggish, it is untimely to develop the enlightenment factors of tranquility, the enlightenment factors of concentration, and the enlightenment factor of equanimity. For what reason? Because the mind is sluggish, bhikkhus, and it is difficult to arouse it with those things. Suppose, bhikkhu, a man wants to make a small fire flare up. If he throws wet grass, wet cow dung, wet timber onto it, sprays it with water, and scatters soil all over it, would he be able to make that small fire flare up? No, Venerable Sir. So too, bhikkhus, on occasion when the mind becomes sluggish, it is untimely to develop the enlightenment factor of tranquility, the enlightenment factor of concentration, and the enlightenment factor of equanimity. For what reason? Because the mind is sluggish, and it is difficult to rouse it with those things. Then go down to three, the excited mind, untimely. On an occasion, bhikkhus, when the mind becomes excited, it is untimely to develop the enlightenment factor of discrimination of states, the enlightenment factor of energy, and the enlightenment factor of rapture. For what reason? Because the mind is excited, and it is difficult to calm it down with these things. Suppose a man wants to extinguish a great bonfire. If he throws dry grass, dry cow dung, dry timber onto it, blows on it, and does not scatter soil over it, would it be able to extinguish the great bonfire? No, Venerable Sir. On an occasion, bhikkhus, when the mind becomes excited, it is timely to develop the enlightenment factors of tranquility, the enlightenment factors of concentration, the enlightenment factors of equanimity. For what reason? Because the mind is excited, bhikkhus, and it is easy to calm it down with these things. And goes through the bonfire thing again. So too, bhikkhus, on an occasion when the mind becomes excited, it is timely to develop the enlightenment factors of tranquility, the enlightenment factors of concentration, and the enlightenment factors of equanimity. For what reason? Because the mind is excited, and it is easy to calm it down with these things. But mindfulness, bhikkhus, I say, is always useful. Okay, and then the last section that I wanted to go over is this one's Sutta 57, called the Skeleton of Grapefruit. at Savati. Bhikkhus, when the perception of a skeleton is developed and cultivated, it is of great fruit and benefit. And how, bhikkhus, is the perception of a skeleton developed and cultivated so that it is of great fruit and benefit? Here, bhikkhus, a bhikkhu develops the enlightenment factor of mindfulness accompanied by the perception of a skeleton. He develops the enlightenment factor of equanimity accompanied by the perception of a skeleton, based upon seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, maturing and release. It is in this way that the perception of a skeleton is developed and cultivated, so it is of great fruit and benefit. Bhikkhus, when the perception of a skeleton is developed and cultivated, one of two fruits is to be expected, either final knowledge in this very life, or if there is a residue of clinging, the state of non-returning. And how, bhikkhus, is the perception of a skeleton developed and cultivated, so that one of two fruits is expected, either final knowledge in this life, or if there is a residue of clinging, the state of non-returning, then he develops the seven factors. When the perception of a skeleton is developed and cultivated, it leads to great good. When the perception of a skeleton is developed and cultivated, it leads to great security from bondage. When the perception of a skeleton is developed and cultivated, it leads to great sense of urgency. When the perception of a skeleton is developed and cultivated, it leads to dwelling in great comfort. So that's I think that's a really interesting sutta, in that I think it's the only one where usually when he says you develop the seven factors, then it says sort of, you just say developing, say the enlightenment factor of mindfulness, then it'll say based upon seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, maturing and release. But here it sort of says, you know, where's the phrasing of that? Yeah, so he says you develop the enlightenment factor of mindfulness then accompanied by the perception of a skeleton. So you've already, you're working with mindfulness of that. Then he goes on, after that particular sutta, and it's the exact same format. You know, he goes through other sorts of meditation techniques you can use with the seven factors of enlightenment. One is the perception of a worm-infested corpse, is the perception of a livid corpse, perception of a fissured corpse, perception of a bloated corpse, seven factors of enlightenment with loving-kindness, with compassion, with altruistic joy, with equanimity, with mindfulness of breathing, with the perception of foulness, with the perception of death, with the perception of the repulsiveness of food, with the perception non-delight in the entire world, perception of impermanence, perception of suffering in the impermanence, perception of non-self and what is suffering, and the perception of abandonment, and the perception of dispassion. And the last one is the perception of cessation. Any questions?
What's abandonment? What is that?
Just the
in relation to, actually, I mean, that's all I'm thinking of.
Yeah, just, I think it just says, it just says, bhikkhus, when the perception of abandonment, probably means that it's the abandonment of the five hindrances or anything that's clinging to the round of rebirth, because it's dispassion, cessation, the two that follow it. Okay, so next week we'll have Thinkajin Karunadhammo.
Thank you.